It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee and Andy are here. We're going to talk about the new MacBook Pros. And it's not speculation. This time it's for real because Renee Ritchie's had one all this time. And he's got a review of the 13 and the 15-inch battery life screen, keyboard, and of course the touchpad. We'll take a look coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 533, recorded Tuesday, November 15th, 2016. Krusty Rolls. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Visit Hover.com. Use the promo code MacBreak at checkout. You'll save 10% off your first purchase. And by Optical Cables by Corning. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And joining us right now, the man with the news in his hand, Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
Good to see you.
My head's so big this week.
Your head should be big. You have the new MacBook Pro, and we're going to talk about that in a second. You have all three of them. Wow.
I'm holding them up. It's good lifting, Leo. It's health conscious.
Look at that.
You're so thin now. You need multiple ones to get your workout in.
As your Instagram said, all the space grays.
All the space, yes.
Yes. And I am working on your beard, as a matter of fact. I realize now my beard is going to look exactly like your beard. We have for a young guy, you're awfully gray. We have the same hair color and beard color.
I went gray in high school.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I like it. Andy Anako, who is never going to go gray. Wait a minute. There's a little gray there too.
There's plenty. It's funny when I go through like the timeline of now that you have like all the photos online of like all the things been taken for the past 10 years. It's like my old age is like it's like a progress bar loading in. You can see where it's like from like 8 years ago, this is all like red or a copper, but you see it like just a little slowly. Bit. It's almost there. And like Father Time is not like jiggling the mouse with his scythe saying, oh man, it's been stuck on that forever.
So you're in a hotel room. Trouble with the plumbing, or are you traveling?
No, I had to go on the lam. I'm in Los Angeles, as a matter of fact, for the Mac Tech Conference.
Oh, nice. So, and the LA Car Show while you're there?
Maybe, if I have a little bit of time. The great thing about LA is that you feel as though I spent 8 hours on a damn plane. I'm not going to just zip in and zip out.
Here.
I've been here for a couple of days. I'm staying for another day. Yeah.
LA's great. Yeah. Andy writes for the Chicago Sun-Times, the not trunk of Chicago, and joins us, as does Renee, every week to talk about Macintosh. I'm not doing you a disservice to say that you don't have a MacBook Pro, right? I mean, you don't have a MacBook Pro.
No.
Okay. So we will defer here to Mr. Ritchie. They've taken my money. That's the good side.
First they come for your money, then they come for your removable SSDs.
So we ordered two. We ordered a 13 in silver and a 15 in space gray. I'm liking that space gray. I think that looks pretty good. But the real question everybody has, and there's lots to talk about, the new trackpad, the P3 screen, but the real question everybody has is the touch bar. Is it a gimmick? Does it, you know, my concern about it, and Joanna Stern kind of echoed this in her review in the Wall Street Journal this morning, is that it is not something we're trained to use. There's no tactile feedback. If you're a touch typist, you still have to look down at the touch bar to use it because it changes all the time. And I'm concerned that I may just end up not using it. But Renee, you've had it for, how long have you had it for?
I've had one with the touch bar for a week and a half now, and the 15-inch for about 4 or 5 days.
Okay. Week and a half then. Oh, and the other thing, and I know Andy will want to know about this, but we won't get into it until we do the touch bar, is the new keyboard. But how does that touch bar work? Gimmick or not?
So I have mixed feelings about the Touch Bar, and in a week and a half, I've gotten to use it a lot more. The problem with the Touch Bar is that not every Mac has it, which means they can't make anything that's dependent on it. And when something's not dependent on it, you're not forced to use it. And then there's even odds you'll never make it a habit. And it really is like 3D Touch. I use it all the time, but I have friends with iPhone 7s or 6s who never use it.
Yeah.
So it really is a convenience sort of feature. I thought I would like it less than I ended up liking it. On the iPad Pro, I still get upset when I have to reach up and touch the screen because I'm busy typing and it feels like you're making me stop typing to reach up and touch the screen. And with this, it was the same thing. I was like, I'm busy looking at the screen. Don't make me look down to look at this new Touch Bar because that's where my fingers are busy doing. But what I realized is that I'm forced to stop all the time anyway. I wasn't even thinking about it. I often don't remember how words are spelled or which word is the right word. Often I don't remember shortcuts because Adobe and Apple, bless them, use different keyboards. To cut in Final Cut is different than to cut in Logic is different than to cut in GarageBand. And Illustrator and InDesign and Adobe, they can't even get their copy paste stuff in order. And I would have to previously stop, reach for the mouse or the trackpad, go up to the menu bar, drop down, look for the command, or more often than I'd like, go to help and search for it because I use all these apps, but not one of them all the time. So I just never remembered them. But now with the Touch Bar, those commands are more often than not right in front of me. So I look down and there's the cut and I never have to remember that shortcut anymore. So what I found is instead of it interrupting me more often, it's made the interruptions I already have a little bit more efficient.
That makes sense.
At least in some cases.
Do you use the autocorrect at all?
I do. So autocorrect is great unless you use a lot of words that don't exist in autocorrect. And when you're a tech blogger, you tend to do that.
Right.
So when I'm just writing a letter, it's fine. But I end up turning it off because a lot of product names or a lot of the stuff I want to use, they get autocorrected in really bad ways. But what I noticed here is like there's a lot of English. Again, it's a horrible language with lots of different sources and spellings and variations. And if I type, it doesn't work all the time. Sometimes I have to type so much of the word, I might as well guess at the complete word. But sometimes I'm typing a word and it's getting better over time because it's learning how I type. I'll look down briefly, see the word, and then just continue typing it. Where previously I'd have to, copy the word, go to dictionary, type it into Google, look for Google suggestions and stuff like that. So in that way, it's a little bit more efficient too.
And of course, I think everybody agrees that the one feature of the Touch Bar that is fantastic is Touch ID.
It is great. It's essentially a little iOS device, so it's secure. And the only problem I had initially is that I didn't remember to use it. So I was sitting there staring at the login because for password and Apple Watch, actual text below your login saying what it's doing.
Yeah.
But this was nothing. And I was just staring at it, and the text is on the Touch Bar. So then I looked down and said Touch ID. And then I slapped my head. And after about 3 or 4 days, I remembered to do it.
Yeah.
But until then, it's like trying to unlock a non-Touch ID iPhone with Touch ID. You just spend 3 seconds before
you. So when you don't log into your computer anymore, you just touch the Touch ID thing.
Yeah, and now it's a competition because my watch will sometimes beat my finger to unlock.
Yeah, for some reason it won't let me set up my watch. It says the watch isn't registered with your Apple ID, even though it is. So I'm still working.
And the one thing I miss, hopefully Steve Gibson will get into this at some point, is I wish Apple would let us choose, like if you're in a highly secure environment, to use Touch ID plus password plus Apple Watch or some combination of what you know, what you have, and what you are, so you get real multi-factor going there. Because I think that's a huge benefit to what they've set up that they just haven't enabled yet.
Yeah. Still, I mean, this is pretty exciting. And really, it is two-factor in the sense that you have to have your MacBook and you need to be your fingerprint. So, yeah, it'd be nice if you could do like for super secure things, you could have both the password and the fingerprint.
Absolutely. And it's like iOS, where if it ever reboots or you hold down the power button and you forcibly reboot it, anytime it's not just sleeping, it flushes your credentials and you're required to log in again.
Sounds pretty good. Andy, did you have anything you wanted to ask Renee about?
Does it kind of freak you out that when you have the actual function keys that that there's like dead space on the left edge of the touchpad that's not ever a key, whereas you have the entire left edge of the physical keyboard that doesn't line up with anything? It looks like having the escape key, like let's say 1 centimeter off to the left from where the rest of the edge of the keyboard is.
Yeah, it does actually, because you can actually feel the edge of the Touch Bar, and I've gotten used to where escape is, so I can hit it without thinking about it. But if I could feel the edge of that Touch Bar, I would just tactily know where the escape key was, and that would be even better.
Be nice to have little bumps or something on there.
It's just an odd choice.
I'm just really surprised they didn't put haptics behind that. It seems like such a natural place to put the Taptic engine.
Next generation.
Yep.
You always get the feeling Apple's holding a little bit back, just so they have something to do next time.
They're pretty adamant that they don't hold back, but there's just some things they can't figure out for the price point they want to hit now, and they know they'll be able to do it next year.
They may not say, oh, hey, we got this, we could do it, but let's not do it. But it's very much, well, like, we got a whole, you know, we don't have to put everything into this.
More, yeah, and we have to figure out where to put this.
You don't have to do everything right away.
Because they were adamant about hitting that bargain $2,200 price point.
Oofta.
Well, no matter what corners they had to cut.
So the formula, they're absolutely expensive things, but Apple's typical formula is we'll buy the best price, the best parts we can, and then we'll charge our margin on top of it. So if it's like it's 33% plus whatever it cost them to get all those parts together.
They're
typically consistent with that.
Why do you think they left it? So this is the John Gruber tweet that I imagine it prompted your question, Andy. Why do you think they left that space to the left of Escape? Why doesn't
it's a
Escape
visually balanced Touch ID?
Visually choice, balance
it's odd,
it.
It's an odd. Yeah, I mean, like you can debate these things, but I would prefer the Escape key to be flush.
Yeah, yeah, it should be where the Escape key was, because at least we have that muscle memory.
Plus, it's dead space, like you said, which is just always suboptimal.
So Gruber's pointing out that about half of it does work, so you don't have to hit it right on there. But nevertheless, that's. Mm-hmm. How programmable is this? Could I get in there with some code and modify that?
If you make an app, that app can do a heavy level of customization within that app. You can also go into the keyboard settings and change the control strip, which are the default applications. Like Serenity this morning was saying how easy it is to hit Siri when you're trying to hit the delete key by accident. So you can change that or move it. It goes into jiggly mode and you do all that.
So you could have if you use the Emacs GUI version of Emacs, you could have it put the Escape key all the way to the left.
I don't know how flexible it is on that. I mean, Emacs would have to interface with the system and tell it to do that. But I think, I mean, like, there's so much going on there. Like the amount of controls I've seen even now on the first week of release, from Final Cut to like the way the iWork apps use it, it looks like a completely programmable surface. Almost, I was joking because they did actually have a DJ on stage during the event. They had Kareem from Algorithm. But when you start using it, you get like at some point it's one hand on the trackpad, one hand on the touch bar, sometimes one hand on the keyboard. And I almost felt like I was DJing with productivity for a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. All right. Let's rip off the Band-Aid here. Keyboard.
It's going to be Andy's going to hate it. It's going to be incredibly divisive. I like it better than the MacBook, but I already liked the MacBook, and I didn't like going back and forth. My brain had a hard time with that because it would take me a few minutes to adjust, but I haven't used my old one, and I'm really enjoying the punchy feeling, but they do feel louder. They are clackier, but not clickety clackier. And there's the travel is not there. So anyone who likes clickety clackety keyboards, which I don't, is going to hate this. And anyone who doesn't like clickety clackety keyboards like me is going to like it.
We talked about this in the past couple of shows. All I'll say is I've now spent a couple of hours typing on that keyboard, and no, I still hate it.
It is thinner.
But also say that you do get, remember that at the Apple store, you do get 2 weeks to take it back, and you don't even have to have a reason why. So, if that's your fear, type the hell out of that keyboard during the first 13 days. But if you don't like it by then, don't listen to people saying, oh, you'll get used to it. Because if you're not used to it by 13 days, it's time to get your money back and look elsewhere.
And we should mention, if you go online and try to order it now, it's 4 to 5 weeks in the U.S. I understand from said in our chat room that it's also 4 to 5 weeks in the UK. But if you ordered it online day of, you should be getting it this week. And we think it's going to be in the stores Thursday. Does that comport with what you know and understand, gentlemen?
Yeah, but those will be Apple always has several in-store models, so it won't have any of the built-to-order options. You're going to still if you want to upgrade the parts, they'll do some in-store upgrades. But if you want it exactly the way you want it, you're still going to have to go online.
So we did. We kind of split the baby by ordering what we wanted, and then I think Thursday we'll be haunting the Apple store, and you can always take the one you don't want back, right?
Within two weeks. But I will say that. If you get a choice, if you have to choose between waiting a couple of months and getting it outfitted exactly the way you want and getting it right now and having it for December, I would wait. One of the biggest mistakes you can make with a MacBook is I wish I had another $180 so I could get the next level up of RAM. wait until you get another $180 in the kitty, because remember, you don't have that chance to upgrade it. And you might be in a situation where next year you are editing a lot of 4K video and you really do need all that extra headroom. And remember, this is your one chance to make your computer as perfect as possible for the next 2 or 3 years. So don't really think that you have to have it today. It's better to have a better Mac in January than something that's not quite right for you in November.
At least when it comes to RAM.
You can't change it. You can't change anything about it. So make sure
not even the RAM. You can't add RAM to this.
No. It is an appliance. It is a sealed MacBook Air.
At least when it comes to RAM, pretty much Apple's already kind of established that you're going to get 16 gigs whether you want it or not. So
you can get 8. I mean, you can lowball yourself.
I can't. I imagine that they'll have in store options with 16. That would surprise me if they only offered 8 in store.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be easy to get your hands on an 8 gig.
Yeah, that one.
8 gig anything for this.
Yeah.
I'm sure that it's the 16 you're going to have to wait for.
Do we really need 8 gigs? You know, it's so funny because we've just, I think some of this is we just, hey, you can get it, so why not? But does it really make a difference in performance?
We did some tests, and I know like last week we talked about Jonathan Zarsky doing tests. We did some similar tests, and Apple doesn't just buy off-the-shelf parts and they tune exactly for the hardware that they want. That's the benefit they have for not having to support, you know, hundreds of varieties of hardware. So the memory compression in macOS, but also those SSDs, I'm having a hard time explaining to people how fast they are. They just pegged every test I could put on them, and I had a hard time actually telling when it swaps. So absolutely, it is nowhere near 32 gigabytes, and if you really need 32 gigabytes, you'll know the difference. But if you are not sure, I would take Andy's advice and urge you to try
it,
because I think you'll get lot more out of eight. A lot of people said 8 is fine for them. 16, I think people who don't think 16 is enough will be pleasantly surprised with how much you could do at 16 gigabytes.
Yeah, if you're doing, somebody's saying, and I think this is true, Beatmaster, who lives up to his name, he says, if you're working with DAWs, with digital audio workstations, with many, many tracks, 8 gigs. And I would have thought, although Jonathan Zdarsky kind of surprised me, I would have thought Photoshop would be a real RAM hog. I think what it goes to scratch disk if it can't get it in RAM.
Yes.
These disks are so fast. Yeah. Maybe it isn't such a disadvantage.
100% faster than last. And the thing I noticed also is that if you use Apple's apps, like if you use Safari instead of Chrome, if you use Final Cut instead of Premiere, and not everybody does, absolutely not everybody does, but those apps are also optimized for this hardware, so they use much less memory than the sort of cross-platform apps.
Right. You like the Space Gray? Let's talk about fit and finish.
I do. I mean, in the light, it looks almost as silver as the regular MacBook. Oh, yeah. In the dark, it looks very space gray.
Pretty.
It's the same space gray as the iPad. It's not the dark space gray of the Apple Watch. Like you can see compared to the Apple Watch, it's way lighter.
Oh, he's showing off his Nike band. You just stop it.
Sorry. We'll get to those later. But I like it just because I'm not tired. I hate to say I'm tired of a color, but it's nice to have some option. I would have loved to have rose gold in this too, of course, but or jet black or something. But
jet black would be so sweet. Twice as much
choice as last year.
Yeah.
Renee posted on Instagram one of his famous, every time he buys gets a new one of a new color, it adds it to the pile of here is everything that I have that's space gray. Yeah. And he had the Nike band watch, and all I could think is, try to pick out the one item on this pile that was not completely controlled and designed by Apple. So you have depressing gray, depressing gray, depressing gray, depressing gray. Wow, vibrant, exciting green. Depressing gray, depressing gray, depressing gray.
I think it's Volt green, right? That's what they call it, Volt.
It's pretty ugly, in my opinion. But
I love it. It's great.
You like it?
It's Gatorade color, Leo.
It's bright. You know, actually, in a way, it's funny because if these were truly pros, by the way, here's Renee's picture of all the space gray.
It's not all mine, by the way. Those are like several families and review units contributed to that picture.
Wow. If you were making a professional laptop, then grays and silvers, you know, the kind of more professional colors make sense. If you're not making a professional laptop, it'd be nice to have some other colors in there as well.
Beige.
I think pros, right, want a prosaic color.
They'll put stickers on anyway. They'll have their startup stickers and whatever.
Yeah. It's not a pro laptop.
I would just love to see like Apple's design language saying, well, let's have some fun with some bright colors somewhere.
Yeah.
That's all. That'd be
open it up and it's pink on the inside.
Yeah. I just imagine like the set when Apple and Chiat Day were like planning the 1984 commercial. So now remember, we have to make like the IBM technology look like it's for boring people gray. Who are not creative. Make sure we paint all of it gray and no color anywhere.
Well, it's sort of like those people, like there's a bunch of designers and artists who paint their rooms, their studios, interface gray because they want everything else to pop off of it. And I think part of that logic here is right. You want the computer to sort of not get in the way because
no, that's right.
What you put on the screen, that's going to bounce.
Pros don't want color.
Well,
and yet, ironically, these are not pros. You actually made an interesting point in your Instagram post following that post saying pro is meant to be inclusive these days. Which is a nice spin,
well, that was,
Renee.
Well, no, so that was part because Jonathan and I got into this conversation where a bunch of people, for some reason, I was spared this, but he got harshly attacked for his comment, and he was saying that you don't get to define whether I call myself a pro or not.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about that, and that's, I mean, not calling him a pro, like he's the FBI uses his tools. It's kind of silly, but there are people who think my use case is pro, and it's sort of like anyone who comes from a village higher up than you is from the north. Doesn't matter how far, they're a mile north, they come from the north. upstate New York is any place higher than where I live.
Right.
And that sort of thing. Like I am a pro, and anyone who doesn't use what I use is therefore not a pro.
Right. That's not fair sort of either. Right. Yeah. Okay. You explain it.
But part of this is the computers get democratized and we allow more people. Like you had to go to IBM. Like when I was a kid, I had to go to IBM to see my dad using punch cards.
Right.
There were no home computers. And now I have this crazy computer in my pocket. And it just enables us to become pros where before there was exclusive access to that technology.
How about
we're not going to rehash what we've been talking about the last 2 weeks. But the easy way for me to add my two cents to this is just that Apple has a responsibility that other makers don't have, given that they make every single Macintosh out there. So if they make a top of the line Mac that excludes a real good percentage of their users, that those users have no place to go. So that's why, I mean, you already heard me rail about this last week about the keyboard, but it's like, if you don't put like a decent keyboard in it, and now you can't get a decent keyboard on any Mac anywhere, you've just said, you people, go elsewhere. We don't care about you anymore. So I just wish that Apple would be more inclusive across all of their product lines.
I think that's fair, especially in internet. Like, there's a lot you can say. Like, you know, people say they should have KB, like, but those chips actually Intel has not shipped them yet. And you could say they should have NVIDIA instead of AMD. But apparently AMD was willing to let Apple do things that NVIDIA simply was not willing to let them do with the graphics cards. And you can talk about RAM and what Skylake supports, but the keyboard is like a choice thing. And to Andy's point, you have no other option now. If you detest this keyboard, Apple is not making except for the MacBook Air, Apple is not making a modern laptop for you.
Size feels good, lighter, thinner. It's half a pound thinner, lighter rather.
Yeah, it feels like a MacBook. Like it's about the size of a MacBook Air. It feels denser though, and I don't know what that is. But it's also more. It's also completely.
Is that the 15?
This is the 13. The 15 is. I'll back up a bit.
A little
here. So like you got to do your lift.
I'm excited about the. I have to admit, for all the mocking I gave Apple for being thinner, lighter. The half a pound is not an insignificant drop. I think that's a pretty no. Andy doesn't buy it.
Well, I'm saying it's a significant loss if you're carrying it from your cubicle to the conference room and back. I'm not mocking that. That is a thing.
It's mostly what I do.
but speaking as someone who just traveled like 3,200 miles, you don't leave the house
luggage with
just the laptop, right? It's like. It's not to me. It's not significantly smaller. It's not significantly lighter for the things that have to be given up in order to get that lightness. And
you're still carrying half a pound of extra dongles, so that makes up for it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit flexible on that one. I'm willing to think of that about that as instead of having like on my. I love the fact that on my MacBook Pro in front of me. I have my microphone plugs right in, my camera plugs right in, all these other things plug right in. And there's also still like an HDMI port, there's also still a display port, a Thunderbolt port, a couple other things. But I do appreciate the idea that they have said, instead of telling you what each of these ports is for, we're just going to give you four super duper high speed ports, and you can make them do whatever you want them to do.
Yeah.
And given that Apple has already said, no, we are the dongle company. You are not leaving the house without at least one dongle. That war has already been lost, so you may as well, you know, make the best out of the dongle.
Also,
world
I've already invested because of phones and the Pixel and the MacBook in lots of Type-C interface units, and I can connect anything. So
wait for Type-D, Leo.
Yeah.
Wait for Type-D.
You know, and Andy, you've seen, I'm sure, there are MagSafe adapters for Type-C.
Well, that's, again,
that will solve
I always thought that was a... The only weird thing about that is that, remember that... When I travel, one of the reasons why I always travel with like huge battery packs is that I absolutely will not use a public USB charger, even if it's one of those that you pay for, because a USB port doesn't just give you power, it also it's also a data port, and so I would be just as wary of buying a third party charger or using a third party adapter or anything like that, because now it's impossible to charge your MacBook without exposing the charger to the data bus of your machine. And it's already possible for somebody to hand out free, let's say, USB chargers at a conference. And nobody knows that there's actually extra circuitry in there that has nothing to do with charging the battery or preventing the LiPos from exploding. So that's not a warning. It's not a reason not to buy this or use chargers. But it is something that there are people that have enough really super critical data on these machines that it will have to be something they think of moving forward.
So
my aha moment was there's this coffee shop, this little mom and pop coffee shop where there was this chair I liked, but I could never sit in it because the power was on the wrong side of my MacBook, and it just couldn't quite reach.
And
then I went
around
there with this. And I could plug into either side. Yeah. And it seems like the silliest thing, just being able to plug into either side, because maybe you have a disk plugged into the other one and you're halfway through a backup and it just doesn't, you can't put both. But it's so nice to be able to plug anything up or down, no matter what way you want it, right into those ports.
I'll vouch for that, because the Chromebook Pixel a year ago did that. And it's great not having to worry about which side. The other thing I like about Type-C is I have a lot of Type-C chargers lying around for phones. And even though they might be slower than the regular ones, I presume that Apple does what they did with the MacBook, which was any of them will charge it, even if it's just a trickle charge. Yeah. You know, who didn't do that was HP. HP makes a wonderful, beautiful PC laptop, the HP Spectre 13T. Yeah. And it has three Type-C ports. Only one of them charges, and it will only charge with HP's proprietary charging brick, which
that's kind of dumb.
That's just
stupid. The fact that the MacBook uses USB-C for charging, it's not just removing one kind of connector. It also means that if you really want to have a 20-hour battery life, that's fine. Again, but get the big, shoehorn size anchor 2600 battery, and you're good to go. I was so pleased, because it seemed like when I was reviewing the MacBook, I had to double check with my contacts at Apple to say that to make sure that I was seeing what I really thought I was seeing, because I thought that there's a possibility that if Apple had a way to simply say, we're not confident you'll get the best charging experience, because it charges a lot more slowly. And so to prevent confusing our poor users, we thought we would turn that feature off. But it's absolutely great. It's absolutely brilliant.
And it actually does better than the iPad. The iPad will not charge on some low power
chargers. That's weird. Don't you hope that they decide to get rid of Lightning and just switch to USB-C across the entire board?
That's why I was disappointed about the headphone jack, because that basically bought them into several more years of Lightning, right?
Renee might know more than I do on this point, but I've been looking into it over the past couple of months about what can Lightning do that USB-C can't do, and I'm just not coming up with any real answers. It's a little bit more compact. Certainly, but I just don't know any answer to why what anybody is getting from Lightning that they're not getting from USB-C.
The cynic would say a fatter wallet.
I mean, there's a couple of things with Lightning, and the team that worked on Lightning also worked on USB-C. So that's why right. Apple's all in on USB-C as well. There was a couple of things. One is USB-C was taking a long time, and Apple didn't really know when it was going to ship, and they wanted that new connector now. And Lightning got them to market with a modern connector way faster than if they'd waited. It is a little bit more compact, but also they can do what they want with it. They don't have to wait for a consortium. So if something happens tomorrow and they decide everything's getting augmented reality, but oh, it really only needs this pin to be able to do it, they can do that in a heartbeat and they don't have to talk to anybody or weigh anything. And that's the sort of control that they were used to on iOS devices.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could backpedal from that. They would change. People would be upset they're changing the connector again, but I think there'd be enough people that understood at this point the advantages.
Oh, I don't know. They won't do it next year.
But you think people would be so mad? I mean, I just bought
headphones with Lightning. Yeah. I bought 9 dongles, and now you're telling me Type C? You can't. They can't.
Yeah.
This is meant as an observation, not a criticism. But Apple is the company that would say, we are pleased with the transition to the totally wireless world that we're in. We know that people rarely even connect their phones to their desktops anymore via wires. And we think that the best way to encourage the rest of the people to come into the 21st century is by having no ports whatsoever on our iOS devices. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm saying that in any
that actually,
if like another company did that, you say, oh my God, they just don't want to be in business anymore. But Apple would say, okay.
That may be the secret. That may be the way they handle this, right? Is just phase out the Lightning port, right? Don't even bother.
Calling it USB free.
USB free. What is the battery life on these? Is it the same?
So Apple says 10 hours for all of them. I got slightly more on the one without the touch bar, probably just because it's lower spec, so it's putting less demands, or maybe the battery is slightly bigger. I'm not positive. The other ones, I got a little bit of mixed results. When we were going hardcore with Final Cut Pro, we got probably around 8.5 to 9 hours. But then again, I was using it the next day and I worked for 3 or 4 hours and I said I had 11 hours left. So I just realized that prognostication is not, it's not easy, but I've gotten close to 10 hours. They're brand new and I'm doing a wacky workload with 3 different machines right now.
A wacky workload.
Well, I mean, I'm bouncing between them because I had to use all of them to get the review done. So it's hard to say, like, so the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be putting each of them through a normal schedule.
Bottom line is,
It's fine.
Because, it's not so different that you can say definitively that it's different. So that means
it's like a phone. Like, you know, when they ask about the phone, it's like it's more important what cell tower you're standing next to than what the actual battery is. And this is the same thing. It's more like if you're running Chrome, it's less than if you're running Safari. If you're running Final Cut, it's less than if you're running Premiere. And you can totally run those apps. But, you know, everything, every load you put on the device lessens the battery life.
Yeah. What is now that we're getting the reviews, everybody who's had them for a couple of weeks is off embargo. The reviews have come out everywhere. Most people are pretty positive, but I would say in every case it's mixed. You know, there's a little bit of, you know, dissatisfaction with some of the things. How about the pro community? Has that calmed down or are people still up in arms? Somebody in the chat room said, I know a lot of people who are abandoning Macintosh now and getting Windows laptops, et cetera.
It's a visceral thing. I mean, like these are the people who stayed with Apple when Apple was doomed, and they, at some level, they feel personally betrayed. And it's what on one side, it's easy to see Apple's become the mainstream computing company by virtue of phones and tablets, and they're seeking that mainstream audience, and that leaves niche audiences behind. Where Microsoft, who didn't get into who weren't successful at mobile, they're now finding an amazing market with the niche, and they're sort of living in this topsy turvy, backwards, upside down timeline all of a sudden. And I think that's perfectly valid. And Apple, because they don't license their operating system and they don't make 18 different SKUs of everything, they absolutely abandoned the highest of the highest level pros who've been their traditional customer base.
I think I have to recognize that I'm not a pro because I think these will be just fine. And for me, I'm not saying for everybody, but for me, I think 16 gigs will be just fine. The speed and all of that will be just fine. And I'll probably get used to the keyboard too. I want a new MacBook. I do. I need a new drug.
I would only, wouldn't even put as strongly saying take issue, but want to clarify that every single user of a phone or a laptop is a niche user.
Right.
Everybody.
Right.
And so that's a word
that if it fits your niche. Yeah.
Well, it's just that it, and unfortunately, it's it's easy to simply say that if there's a feature of a piece of software that isn't there, well, it's just a niche feature for a niche audience. Well, the thing is, it's like a feature that 100% of your users use, let's say, three times at least over the course of the year. And when they don't find it, it's a real, real bummer. And there's the larger issue of Apple still having that reputation, very well earned, I think, as the makers of some of the finest machines that run operating systems that you can buy anywhere. But I think that they are in danger of losing that if they decide that we're just going to keep making the exact same laptop over and over and over again, and we're just going to redesign the case, or we're going to redesign, we're going to delete some ports, and we're going to do some fiddling here and there. It seems to me that if they decide that we are not going to make computers for more than the one or two different types of users that we can clearly imagine, that's not the sort of company that 50 years from now we look back and say that was a great company. Boy, where they could do anything. They were very, very smart. They were taking their job as an industry leader really, really seriously. I mean, you can't be a bakery that sells only crusty rolls. You know, you have to if you want to be a great bakery, you also have to show that you can make things other than rolls, or else the only people you're ever going to be selling to are restaurants.
And yet, damn, I love a good crusty roll.
And, oh my God! I still think there was a bakery. My grandmother was like Italian, and she went to the old lady Italian church. Okay, and of course Catholic.
You know,
and
what do you want with the old lady Italian church? You want to go to their yearly festival with the food.
The St. Anne's Bazaar. Every single year I would go. I would help my grandmother, like, do whatever volunteer stuff. But I'm saying that there was this bakery right behind the church that was only open like on the hour, like right after masses. And so, and it was like Brigadoon, like.
And just like Brigadoon,
I know this because
Andy briefly entered a different era, but he's come back. Sorry, you froze there for a moment.
I'm sorry.
All we heard was just like Brigadoon.
Oh no, it was like you, I tried to find it because it had these rolls that every roll like was like a Snickers bar, you know. It was like the most delicious thing ever, and
crusty on the outside, puffy and fluffy on the inside,
just chewy, and oh my goodness. And even right now I'm in a faraway land thinking about this roll that I have not had in 20 years,
you know,
because I can't find it. I'm not an old Italian lady, so I cannot find the mists do not part on River Street in Hyde Park. I cannot find
Yeah, we sound like heroin addicts talking about our roles.
Oh, heroin!
I'm just so hungry
easy.
Right now.
you can buy heroin. I'm in L.A. I could buy heroin if I wanted heroin.
But crusty roll, no way. Did it have a little split down the top?
Oh. No. It was like they're
just
like
round
baked. So like you tear them apart, and there's like. Oh. Now I'm sad.
I'm a carb addict. Sad now. I have a problem. Mm. Hi, my name is Leo, and I'm addicted to carbs.
It's not your fault.
Because they taste good.
It's nature did this to you.
First step is admitting
addicted. We're not. The key is to understanding addiction is that we're not addicted to things that don't make us feel great.
Well, right.
You know.
Uh huh. That by the way, I understand. I talked to Danny Boyle that he's doing the new Trainspotting, and it's about crusty rolls. So, I think you'll be very pleased with the new one. They've grown up. The kids have grown up. All right. There's lots more to talk about. I want to take a break, but there is lots more to talk about because I hear rumors about the AirPods. I want to know. I feel like Renee might know. God, I just could go on and on, but, and we will, because that's MacBreak Weekly. That's what we do. But first, a word from audible.com. Andy and I are about as addicted to audible.com as we are to crusty rolls. In fact, when you travel, right, you don't go out of the house without a good book on your iPhone, I would imagine, or you're an Android guy. Yep. That's the beauty of Audible, by the way. It's completely agnostic, platform agnostic.
Yeah. I mean, it's even worse now that I have like these, the Amazon Echo and now the Google Home, like pretty much everywhere, because now it's like, Google, read me a story.
Wait a minute. Can you have the Google Home read you an Audible book?
I don't think it works on Audible. I have other things that can be read there, but I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's coming, although it's an Amazon company. but I'm hoping it's coming.
Oh, I would hope so. But that is the best reason.
But it certainly works on Echo, right?
That's why I'm.
I keep wanting to say Alexa, not Echo. Yeah, sorry.
That's why I'm not abandoning the Echo. I have Echo in every room, and Echo's open platform really means that more and more stuff's working with Echo. Google's slower to it's up to Google to do that. And anyway, that's one of the great things about Audible. It's completely runs on every platform, Android, iOS, Windows. They have great Windows 10 app. It runs on a Chromebook because you can now stream from the website, which is a fairly new addition. So what is Audible? It's a great bookstore of audio entertainment, not just books. I'm talking fiction, nonfiction, performances, lectures. Yeah, they have the entire great courses, which just by itself, if you could get these great courses on a subscription would be worth it. The best college lecturers giving lectures on all the stuff we'd love to learn about. And then go to do what Carson's doing right now. If you go to the front page of audible.com. It's, what's nice on my front page is customized based on what I've bought in the past. So it's kind of nice. Like they show all the Peter F. Hamilton books. In fact, this is the best Peter F. Hamilton book. One of our favorite science fiction authors, Steve Gibson, and I rave about this guy. And we both agree the first one to read, if you haven't read any, is Fallen Dragon, which was not available for audio until November 1st. It's one of the things I love about Audible. They have this Audible Frontiers program that records sci-fi that's never been recorded before. So all the classics, the Asimov, the Heinlein. And then there's this book. Where is it? I really thought this sounded kind of interesting. Oh, I know. They took it off the front page because I've already added it to my wish list. So what I do, and I recommend you do, is visit Audible and add to your wish list so that the next time you get a credit, you can Algorithms to Live By, the Computer Science of Human Decisions. It just sounds fascinating to me. And the ratings are very good for this as well. So that's probably going to be one of my next listens. Here's the deal. I'm going to get you your first book free. Ooh, Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla, Biography of a Genius. That sounds like a good one. The problem is you get to Audible, Leonardo's Brain. I love Leonard Schlein, by the way. The late Leonard Schlein was a great writer, genius. Understanding Da Vinci's creative genius. That sounds like, go into the wish list. Add that to the wish list. Here's the deal. Your first book will be free if you go to audible.com/MacBreak. You will be signing up for the Gold plan. That's a book a month, plus the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. The book is yours to keep, however. That's the other thing I love about Audible, that it's like a real bookstore. Every book that I've ever bought on Audible, and I've bought quite a few since I joined in 2000, 16 years ago, is still available to me. So I have a bookshelf now of audiobooks. I plan for the rest of my life, I have enough to listen to that by the time I get to the end of it, it'll be like the Golden Gate Bridge. I'll just start again at the beginning. This one, I can't wait, just came out. Robbie Robertson's Testimony. I was a big fan of the band. And The Last Waltz, one of my favorite music movies. 40 years in the after The Last Waltz and the end of the band, Robbie Robertson tells the story. And I love these rock and roll bios. What are you listening to, Andy, these days?
I'm still about a book behind, but I subscribe, so I get a credit a month. Every time my new credit comes in, I spend it like in the next day because let's go shopping, let's go shopping. And the last book I bought was the new book by Nick Offerman, Good, Clean, Fun, Misadventures in Sawdust at Offerman Woodshop. And when you buy books on Audible, it's not just what book do you want to read. It really is what voice do you want to hear for 6 or 7 hours? Yeah. And Nick Offerman for 6 or 7 hours, that's going to make me very, very happy and very, very productive. And that's going to be pretty darn good. It really is. He's a craftsman. He has his own wood shop. So he really talks a lot about building stuff on your own. It's a little bit like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, where it will teach you about motorcycle maintenance, but it's really about the process of solving problems and looking at something that doesn't work and thinking of it as something that you can actually accomplish. So I've never had an audiobook about woodworking, but I think that this is going to be a pretty good one for me.
I note that it has songs on it, original songs by Jeff Tweedy and Nick Offerman. Jeff Tweedy, of course, of Wilco. Wow. I'd like to hear that. Now, is Nick Offerman in real life kind of the same as his character Ron Swanson, or completely different? Because he kind of plays up that character.
in Parks and Rec?
I think that his personality informed the character, certainly.
Yeah. He's kind of stoic and dry and.
His woodworking is a real deal. It's not just something where he took a class 8 years ago and then decided to buy a partnership and a business and then realizes this is a good thing to pose for on book covers. So I tend to think that there's a lot of intersection in that Venn diagram between the two characters.
Interesting. Speaking of characters, I see Bryan Cranston has a biography just came out. Mm-hmm. A Life in Parts.
Yeah, I tend to get a lot more autobiographies by people who are reading their own stories because that's one of the things that I think really takes advantage of the audiobooks.
Yes,
that when you see her, this is me saying things in the first person.
Yeah, I agree. I love the readers for the fiction because they get really good actors to do the readers.
Yeah,
but the fiction. But I do think that if you're listening to like James Corden reading his memoirs, that's going to be much more vivid. You know, here's a bestseller, which I really didn't think about, but Anna Kendrick has a memoir, Scrappy Little Nobody, and of course she reads it. Anyway, look, you can see our fascination and love with Audible. I wish I had, like you, Andy, come the 22nd of the month, my credit, gone. You see, I have zero credits available, and I just, wait with bated breath until the next month comes along. Even though I can't really keep up, I just love having all these books. Here's the deal. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. Get yours right now, your first book free. audible.com/MacBreak for your workout, your commute, anytime. Listening on the Amazon Echo in the bedroom. I do that all the time. Sometimes, if there's not a drama that I'm engaged in on the television, sometimes I don't even, I think I don't want to spend another evening in front of the boob tube. I'll go to my bedroom and I'll put on my audiobook. And that's just wonderful. That's just very relaxing. Have the fire in the fireplace and listen to an audiobook. I love it. audible.com/MacBreak. What are we doing here? What are we doing? We are talking about... Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. So the last rumor was the AirPods wouldn't be out till next year. They wouldn't start production in December. Now, the next web says Thursday. What?
I'm not going to believe anything until I see them available for sale. I mean, I think at this point it's just prudent not to get anyone's hopes up and just say expect them when you, like, take a page out of Gandalf, expect them when you see them, and then order them as fast as possible.
This is based on a report from a German blog called Apfelpage. Or maybe it's Apfelpage.
Das ist Apfelpage.
Yeah, das ist Apfelpage. So, boy, that would be great. But you're right. You're right. I don't want to hold my breath. Because I'm willing to go wireless. If Apple can give me headphones that sound as good as my, or even close to as good as my wired headphones. And by the way, I'm using those Epic 2s that you recommended, Andy. And those are cheap. They're $100 and they work fine. And I use them with all my phones. They're the ones that sport ones that go over your ear and. And they're great. That's the ones you like, right?
Yeah, I still like them a lot. I still have them with me here today. You just get back to the classic problem of what if you need to leave the house in 5 minutes and you can't find the one pair of headphones that you have that work with it. That's when you're kind of glad that you have 8 or 9 or 10
choice.
Or 12.
Yeah,
a little that you can just grab. When I left the house, I forgot that my Bluetooth headphones were in a secret compartment inside my laptop bag. So I did grab a wired set of headphones just in case. But yeah, they work really well. Also, I think that Apple has optimized the design of the iPhone so that it has really good Bluetooth support, really good Bluetooth antennas and radios, because I'm obviously using my Bluetooth headphones day to day on an Android device. And I noticed that they seem to cut out less on the iPhone 7 Plus than they do on my Nexus 5X because of the design of, they're all around your head. If you have like your phone inside your pocket way, way diagonally against, you might cut out from time to time because there's just so much meat between, the antenna and the broadcaster. But I notice that happens a lot less frequently with the iPhone. So still an inconvenience, but I mean, I certainly never thought it would be a deal breaker, and it certainly isn't.
According to some tech blog called iMore, Apple is Apple is them. Apple is investigating augmented reality glasses.
Oh, that's from Gurman on Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Bloomberg. Gurman said this on Bloomberg TV. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So this is an iMore article. I like to give you guys credit, but it's really based on the. And the reason I don't go to Bloomberg anymore or CNET, hint, hint, is the auto freaking play video. Stop it.
But
knock it off.
He's got such a nice tie.
Nice tie. I know he. Yeah. You could tell he's coming to money, can't you?
He's well, looking. I mean, I don't know if it's money, but it's Bloomberg. It's like, it, you know, he's Bay Area.
Maybe
it's big time business.
He walks in the door. They say, "Here's your shirt and tie. Put it on, kid."
No, I think he came to play.
He came to play. Anyway, Mark has a scooplet that augmented reality glasses may be coming soon, right? Of course, Tim Cook is telegraphed this by saying several times how excited Apple is about AR, not VR, AR. You know, we've seen augmented reality glasses, sort of, with Google Glass. I guess that's not really augmented reality. I'd like to see real. Our friend Jerry Ellsworth does true augmented reality, I think, with Cast AR. Well, even they are a little bit different because you have to have a playing field of special material.
It's HoloLens. I think HoloLens is AR.
Yeah, that's the closest you have it to an AR.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about when we talk about AR, I've seen some demos that were just shocking.
Right.
Well, the
Magic Leap, of course. Magic Leap, you know,
well,
wow.
Well, and we're talking about simple things like not just, we always think about, okay, well, see, you know how we have, you're playing Pokemon Go? Well, imagine that, but you don't have to hold up your phone. Or imagine that you have like a fake computer screen off to your left into your line of vision when it's really,
That's the Magic Leap demo, which I think is suspect.
we're talking about things like I was in a restaurant yesterday. And of course, there's like a TV screen over the bar, and then there's another sports screen like over on the left. Imagine just by nature, you've told it that anytime that there's a screen of any kind, I want you to replace that with my own screens. Mm-hmm. So that if I look up over the bar, I'm not looking at Fox News. I'm looking at like my last like 18 emails. And on the big screen, I'm looking at like a status board that will show me like when the next bus is coming or something literally like I know that I'm going to be taking a bus back to the hotel from this restaurant. I want you to, when the bus is about 15 minutes away, I want you to put like a green, like translucent bus right there where the bus is going to stop. So I know that there's going to be a bus filling that space sometime in the next about 10 to 15 minutes. That's how big AR is. And the limitation right now is that the last 5% of how it works for one, because there are a lot of non-trivial things they have to fix. But also the kind of hardware you need to really make it work and to make it a practical consumer product. So this isn't the sort of thing where Apple can, any company can sort of play with it and decide what they're going to do with it, because there are other companies that already know what they're going to do with it. They just don't know when they're going to release it yet. So this might be the sort of thing where Apple decides to write the biggest check they've ever written in their entire lives to essentially buy 11 years worth of patents, 11 years worth of experience, and 11 years worth of personnel so they can actually get to speed if this becomes something that consumers actually want. It could be huge.
I completely agree. This is the technology, the user interface technology that most excites me. That this and voice combined could completely change how we interact, and I think are inevitable because really what happens is it integrates computing into your environment 100%. One of the reasons I love the Amazon Echo is because the computer gets out of the way. And now I'm just talking to my living room or my kitchen. I'm talking to the house, asking it for stuff, and it does stuff. And it's very primitive and very limited, but it does enough stuff you really get the sense of, I see where this is headed. And I don't think we're too far off. I can't imagine.
Yeah. For AI is much further ahead because we have all the hardware ready to go already, right? And it's in people's houses. And that's another conversation that I had recently. Someone was asking me what's going to replace the keyboard. And my first answer was nothing's going to replace the keyboard, because in terms of getting stuff out of your head and into a computer, no one has come up with something better or more effective or more private. You know, so you don't have to actually talk about that sort of stuff. But in terms of the next really big interface, it's not even voice. It is AI. It is the ability to say something, make your intent known in so few words because the AI knows exactly what you mean. One of my favorite lines in movies is from Broadcast News, where in one line, the screenwriter communicated how intimate these two people are, these lifelong friends. Say, well, why don't we meet at that place where we went that time? So, sure, see you there. And so AI is going to be able to do that. Say, I want to meet that guy at that place we went last year. And they know, and the AI will know intrinsically, instead of opening three different apps and having you parse 100 different commands, it can guess that I believe he means Renee. I believe he means that tea place at Yerba Buena Gardens, because Andy's going to San Francisco. Renee is going to San Francisco. And they both in email discussed this and wouldn't do it automatically. Just like your own personal assistant would say, OK, so lunch with Renee at the Japanese Tea Garden at Yerba Buena Gardens at 12:30 on December 8th. Is this what you really want? And that's, yep, absolutely, book it, and you're done. That's what we're going to be talking about. And a company that can't do that is going to be market. It's going to look like they're behind. They're going to look like BlackBerry in an iPhone world if they can't do that.
Yeah. It's ambient computing. It's just a more human way to interact with the world.
Of all the rumors that we've heard, Apple doing a television or a car, this is the one that, to me, makes the most sense for Apple. It's a logical continuation of where they are. It could clearly be a revolution. It's going to require a company like Apple, or at least the Apple we know and love, to provide design chops, because it can't look dorky. The Google Glass failed. Half of it failed because of poor choices about how it looks. And it has to be user interface has to be spot on, and Apple's very good at that. And the rumor that Gurman is talking about says that Apple has talked about glasses with potential suppliers, has even ordered small quantities, underlined, of near-eye displays from one supplier. One of his sources says 2018 at the earliest. And that, of course, that makes perfect sense, especially if they're just doing tests at this point.
And that's just one product too. Like, that's almost like Snapchat glasses. But my suspicion is that this is a next generation display technology. And you don't really think about Apple as having an LCD or an LED product. It's just there's an interface, and it exists. It's communicated to us through these panels right now. But that Apple's an interface first company. They're going to be doing all sorts of products in the future that would benefit from AR. I mean, we were joking about an Apple car having AR in the HUD, or Apple shuttle buses having AR, offices having it, phones projecting AR. It's going to be ubiquitous. And it's one of those things where if a company like Apple wasn't investing heavily in it, because they have billions of dollars, they're super smart, that's when I would start to panic and be concerned.
Well, if I were Tim Cook, I'd say go all in on this one. The other thing that's different from this, from TVs and cars, is it's greenfield. There's a lot of competition in TVs and cars. We don't have this product yet. Admittedly, Google and Microsoft at least are heavily invested in doing this. I'm not going to worry too much about Google. They are very confused at the moment and are really not showing an ability to bring products to market that galvanize users in the same way Apple can do it. Microsoft, maybe, because they're the closest. HoloLens is a real product. It's limited and primitive in its current existence, but at least, you know, they have something, and they've already announced that they're going to completely redesign Windows 10. They have a new holographic interface that's designed for AR. And yet at the same time, this to me just speaks of, this is an Apple product. Apple.
It's interface. It's exactly
it's
what
interface.
Their forte is.
It's design. Let's not forget design. Yeah. You know, those Google glasses, ugh. The Snapchat is cool looking. You know, those spectacles are kind of interesting. Design is going to be a big part. You do not want to look like a dork walking around. So if anybody could succeed at this, I think it's Apple. And here's my prediction. They won't be first to market. They never are.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you.
They
is it going to be like Apple Watch, where they're maybe a little bit too early? Or is it going to be like iPhone, where they really take their time? And
if
see?
I'm Tim Cook, I put $50 billion into this. I put a significant amount of money.
Going all
this.
In, baby.
I get the feeling from his statements they kind of are. He never said anything about TVs or cars, right? That was analysts. That was all rumors. He's talking about AR. I figure you go all in on it. You say you put a stake in the ground. I think we already know that voice and AR is the future of UI. I think we know that. I don't think this is a guess.
Don't see, Leo.
Well, AI and AR. But they're these are two
AI areas. AR, in which, thank you. Yes,
these are two areas in which Apple might actually be at a disadvantage. They love physical design, but this is not a system where anybody is supposed to be aware that you are using technology at all. This is going to be something that you license right to frame designers that can be put in anything. You know how long it took me to find these frames years ago? Because all I wanted to do was Rene's frames look great on Rene because he has like a lean face. But I don't like those like kind of squat wide glasses because it makes my face look huge. But everywhere I went, all they had were variations on like Ben Franklin glasses.
I think you can make the argument.
Apple is the company that would say we've built the two perfect frames that are available in two different sizes, and these are the ones you get. You're welcome. We've taken the responsibility of decision away from you. But if I hate them, just like if I hate that keyboard, you can't do anything with them.
I think if I'm Apple, I maybe don't make them look like spectacles. I make them look like Jordy glasses or
big
something.
Big eyebrows.
I make them
big eyebrows.
Yeah.
Big crouch eyebrows.
Because
something out of anime.
Isn't that kind of the way Apple is, right? I think you want to say to the world, yeah, no, I'm using an Apple device. They did
white wires.
Is that a
bigger problem, though? Because part of the concern with Google Glasses wasn't just that the way they look, but the sort of what it meant for privacy.
Yeah.
And at least you could identify them by the hobble on their face. And with this, like if Apple or any company, Snapchat makes it cool, then all of a sudden we're like, yeah, I'm being recorded by everybody all the time. No big deal.
It's
about just displaying information.
But don't you think if you see somebody's looking at you kind of funny and you know they're looking at your reputation score and your Wikipedia page and your life
history? There's a Snorlax there. I think they're evaluating me.
I think it's also possible they won't look like anything, that they'll be projected in the pupil in some kind of less obtrusive way.
I mean, it could have something sometimes you have a pencil tucked behind your ear.
Yeah.
That might be interesting.
Yeah.
But because remember, there are people who don't necessarily wear glasses. And so that's not there. Yeah. That's one thing that's been taken away. So it's a non-trivial thing to get it. If I wear glasses, I don't want to wear the one style that is in every single lens crafters. I want to wear a pair that I think works best for me. And if I don't wear glasses, maybe I don't want to put anything on my face whatsoever. So it's a seriously non-trivial exercise. The other problem is that it's not enough to just develop a lot of AI technology inside the spaceship and be working on it for 10 years. You really have to send it out in the world to talk to people. That's the only way that the AI learns anything.
Well, that's why Google put out Glass and HoloLens is Microsoft's putting it out. Those were both very expensive. HoloLens is $3,000. Google was $1,500. And it was acknowledged. This is how we learn. This is not an end product.
But also it's also one of the reasons why Apple gives. It's also one of the reasons why Google is so pleased to give you as much free photo storage as possible, because that gives it, without necessarily violating your privacy, teach the AI, here's what a gajillion human faces look like, and here's what a gajillion pictures of Paris look like. And so it can essentially start learning. Here is what, if we wanted to reconstruct the Eiffel Tower from any angle, here's what it would look like. Or if we wanted to figure out that, gee, this picture of the Eiffel Tower was reshared 8 kajillion times. Once this human being decided to improve the photo, here's the difference between before and after. That will teach the AI, well, if I wanted to improve a picture of a monument on a cloudy day, here's how I would do it, because here's how the humans have done it. So it's going to be, if Apple simply buys a company or develops something in-house, that's fine. But as soon as they make it public, that's the moment that they take off from the starting line, not the moment that they started to research.
Here's a philosophical question. Is all it takes is the willingness to do it and the money? Could Apple, in other words, kind of just buy their way into this? Or is it going to require some special genius? And by the way, if anybody's going to have it, at least, see, I don't know about Tim Cook's Apple.
They've been buying it for years. I mean, they've been buying PrimeSense and a whole bunch of.
They've been acquiring it. But I mean, what does it take to become technology? Let's go back to the last big thing that Apple did, which was the iPhone, and which took how long? 5, 10 years? Long time. Yep. And you had Steve Jobs there, cracking a hell of a whip, right?
and just beating people up and saying, we, you know, got to make this happen. It's got to be. And I don't know if Apple has that person there. And I won't say they won't. I don't know if they do. Is that a requirement? I think it is. More than just $50 billion.
You need someone to own it.
You need the genius.
Yeah.
Mm. I think the problem is that you have to have someone who absolutely doesn't give a fig about the iPhone or the Mac or the
Apple's
Apple Watch
good at that,
or anything
right?
else.
Apple was good at that. They ate their young.
They're good if they feel as though the iPhone that the people are moving away from phones or moving away from laptops. They are completely unafraid of they're okay with people stopping using iPhones so long as the thing they replace it with is also an Apple product and is a good product and it is really the next thing and not just a different iteration of the old thing. However, you can't have a situation where you have an executive saying that, well, we tried putting AI on the watch and it really didn't work with what we're doing with the watch. You can't have them saying that. You have to have them say that we tried it and they're two different things and we've decided that actually they're good separate but equal sort of technologies. You also can't have a situation where it's not open and it doesn't work with all things. It's going to be such a huge pain in the butt. Imagine a mouse that has its own shape and its own button its own button controls, because people are going to be using this basic interface everywhere. And so if the industry doesn't agree on a simple and logical and rational vocabulary or basic user interface, a certain fundamental knowledge that if everybody has this knowledge, they're at least 60% of the way towards understanding how this device works, it's going to be selfish, it's going to be stupid, and it's going to be self-defeating. So Apple would have to make this device that can eat its own young and also work with whatever device, whatever desktop they want to use, no matter what phone they want to use, anything. If they really want to make a splash with this, as opposed to add another wedge to their profit pie and say, "Hey, look how many we sold," that's what they're going to have to do.
That's the question. What Apple are we talking about? And you know, the truth is, in the long run, it's almost always in this kind of innovation happens in a new company. But again, the iPhone happened in Apple, and only because Steve was willing to cannibalize an existing business. That's why.
It's unclear. Glasses are an obvious product, but 20 years from now, everything, the same way everything has an LCD screen now, there could be AR layers to a lot of the products that Apple launches. Right. I think it's ubiquitous beyond a single product.
I guess what's required is that everybody, I don't think this is controversial at all, that this AI and AR are the future of UIs. And everybody needs to be working on this. And I think everybody is working on this. And I think Magic Leap is very interesting. Google has a big stake in Magic Leap, but it isn't a Google company.
Right.
I just feel like that's something I'd get very excited about.
Can you imagine if it was like 20, 30 years ago and there were these rumblings from Xerox and we're like, hey, it sounds like Apple and Microsoft are both working on these GUI things.
Right.
Those sound like they got some legs.
Right. No, that's exactly right. I mean, you would have said, oh, no, Xerox, they've got all this. You saw the demo to end all demos. These guys have got, they've figured this thing called a mouse out, and they've got Windows and GUIs. These Xerox guys, man, they are all in on this. And then, you know.
We're not going to sell any product called mouse.
And very few companies, and name any prime tech company, any company finds it really difficult to escape from their own dogma. Like Xerox would have had big – one of the reasons why they sat on it is that, yes, but how does it help people make documents? How does it help people reproduce documents and distribute documents? They didn't think of it as, here's something that could be the everything of everything.
Right.
This could help us stop being the document company and start being the communications company that could basically make us into a competitor to the phone networks, or really let's not think of ourselves as just a company that sells service contracts on photocopiers. And so Microsoft and Apple and Google and everybody, one of their biggest troubles with a new technology like this is going to be, we are not necessarily a company that makes beautifully designed human interface objects. it's okay for us to, we're not a company that has a small portfolio of devices, all of which are in their own little stalls and they don't really cross over very well. You have to basically decide that, I know that's characteristic of the devices we used to make, but this is something that requires us to do something new. So I'm glad that for now that Google is investing heavily in it, but they're not buying it and they're not making it part of Alphabet, because really need this company to grow and do exactly what it wants to do.
Fascinating. You see how excited I get, and we all get when we're talking about something for the future and exciting. That's more than just it's an evolution. Yeah. You know, we're nibbling the edges.
Ooh, it's thinner.
Yeah, thinner. Thinner doesn't.
Ooh, now it can open Word perfect documents directly.
Thinner doesn't me anymore. All right, let's take a little break. Andy Yannakos here, Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Love just sitting down with these guys and talking about what's going on at Apple. We do it every week, every Tuesday. I love it. Our sponsor today, Hover.com. I just love Hover. I've been a Hover guy. We moved, I don't know, for a while. We moved all of our, domain names over to Hover a few years ago. And have just been so happy with it. And then, Steve Gibson kind of belatedly wanted to do the same. He asked on Twitter, who's the best, blah, blah, blah. Chose Hover. And I was like, Steve, I told you about this years ago. And he was so happy. Hover.com. Not only is it easy to create a new domain name without a lot of checkboxes, you automatically get domain, who is privacy, all the classics too, like .com and .net and yeah, but also pizza, dot pizza, dot, look at, I'll look, let's say East Side Studios, and I'll just use the first, I won't say .com, I'll just say East Side Studios, and then it'll show me all the different things. Oh, look, East Side's dot studio. Oh, I like that. Or I like that, .store.xyz.tech.co.global. I mean, it just goes expertguru.mom, .mo.desi. So there's hundreds of these. But guess what? There's a new one coming. And if you go to hover.com/, I'm really excited about this, name my blog. Hover, starting Monday, November 21st, will have the .blog domain extension. Now, this was exclusive to WordPress for some time, and I guess that their exclusivity has expired, or I don't know, maybe they've done a deal with WordPress, but this is great. I am going to immediately register the .blog domain name, but you have to go, I would suggest you go right now to hover.com/name my blog so that you can, as I did, put in your email address and get notified as soon as they're available. Now, once you register your .blog or .com or .pizza, you'll note that no heavy-handed upselling. You set up your domain quickly with a website and a few clicks. Free Whois privacy. They know you want that, so they just bundle it in. And if you ever have a question or want some help, they are known for their no-wait, no-hold, no-transfer phone support. And they're nice because they're Canadians. They're friendly. They want to help you. I had domains on three or four different registrars, and I saved a lot. I just brought them all to Hover. You can consolidate them all, and the more names you have in your account, the more of a discount you're going to automatically get. So this is a great time to have a blog at the .blog domain. I love that. You should have a blog. You know why you want a blog? Because if you don't have a presence on the web, if you don't put stuff up about yourself, and young people, I'm talking especially to you, you know, put the best of you on the web, then whatever anybody else says about you on the web, that's what people find. You need to do this proactively. You need to do it now. Create a presence for you online, hover.com/name my blog. And by the way, when you buy, use the offer code MacBreak so that you let them know you heard about it here. And you'll get 10% off your first purchase. hover.com/name my blog. I like that. Don't forget the offer code MacBreak. Andy Yannatko.
Hello there.
Hello there. He's in a lovely hotel room in Los Angeles. Is it nice to be doing the show in the morning for a change?
It means that I have to get my butt out of bed earlier, but that's okay because this is one of those rare weeks in which, my goodness, I'm waking up at like 6:30 in the morning. I'm not one of those bums who doesn't get out of bed until 10.
Yeah, because 6:30 is 9:30 your time. That's right. Yeah, you're an early riser.
Don't worry. By Thursday or Friday, I will be. My brain won't be falling for that anymore. It'll say, oh, wait, it's only 6:30. We can sleep for another 3 hours.
Yeah. The reason that we start all of our shows at 11 is because I get to start the shows when I want to, and I don't want to get up early. I remember having to do a morning show is the worst thing in the world. And then eventually I was able to get to the middays. And the best, though, was afternoon drive, because then you don't have to get up till noon because you don't have to show up till 2. Of course, from imore.com, a man who is up early every morning. You don't write a million words, don't write themselves. Rene Ritchie.
The embargoes, Leo. 8 a.m. Eastern Time embargoes. Poor South Coast people.
That's not the Apple Book, is it? No.
No, the MacBook Pro was 8 a.m.
What is
Apple Book? Yeah,
Apple has announced a book. What is this? This is iconic. Alex Gumpel brought this in. Apple. This is not the Apple Book. Apple is just announced this kind of also $300 book. They announced 450 pages. Pictures.
That's the designography. This is the auto designography.
Yeah, right. This one is not. Is this one from Apple? No, this is
no
iconic. But this is kind of cool. Alex Gumpel had this one. So this is a foreword by Jim Dalrymple and Steve Wozniak. Wow. All right. There you go. So how is iconic, which is already out, different from what Apple is about to do?
The Apple one is done in the Apple style. So they hired, I'm blanking on the name now, but they hired a renowned photographer who has a very sparse style and paid them ungodly amounts of money to take photographs of Apple, of generations of Apple products that sort of epitomize the era of the original iMac from 1998 to the Apple Pencil from 2015.
Lots of white space. It almost looks like, you know what it looks like? The images that you get when Apple announces a new product. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a little bit disappointing when I read the press release that they're not going beyond the Johnny Ive, or they're not going beyond 1998, like for the return of Steve Jobs. And they did some really wonderful designs well before that. The original Apple II is just beautiful. The Apple IIc, also beautiful. For heaven's sakes, the Mac, the first Mac, was absolutely just a firework when it came out. Glad to see some love for the G4 Cube, which I still think is one of the coolest designs for any computer ever.
Yeah, I'm sorry I gave mine up. I wrote my first book on that.
It was every time I had to do maintenance on it, I felt like I'm on Star Trek's Next Generation. I'm Geordi LaForge. I'm in the core. I'm pulling the dilithium chamber.
Actually, you could save a little money if you get the little one. That's 10 by 12. It's $199.
Apple Book Nano.
The Apple Book Nano.
No, it's one of those things. I put the video. There's a Johnny Ive narrated video in the chat that sort of explains why.
Of the book?
Yeah, he sort of explains why he's doing this and what the philosophy of Apple design is and why they're sharing it. It's got Japanese subtitles, but it's interesting.
So now we know what Johnny Ive's been busy doing.
We're a small design team. We've worked together for 20, 25 years. One of the things that we've learned is the importance of listening, because as we all know, the very best ideas can very often come from the quietest voice.
Realize that this isn't self-promotion. This ideas is really Apple wanting to put fragile. Their flag in history and be in libraries of when design schools. Them
and how many you're going to have. And so over the years, we've really created a team and an environment that I think really increases the probability of good ideas, and when they actually arrive, I think nurtures them. The design studio really is a workshop. We design three-dimensional objects, and we make lots and lots of models and prototypes.
You know, the number of people designing they've been showing crouching down really on those tables makes me think that table's badly designed.
Finished product that you
higher
see,
table.
Tools had to be designed, process had to be created and experimented with. We've worked very hard to create.
I love the tables with the gray drapes. Like, what's under
all
there?
All of these different facets.
Who's this guy? From Stranger Things. We rented
to be
inquisitive. UV discoloration testing.
Is he a guest or is he a host?
We have really made it a practice.
I think he's
to just have our heads host. Down. And
Johnny's
work.
Definitely a host.
And ignore, in some senses, all the reasons why something shouldn't be
he's
possible.
He's having a reverie right now.
He's sitting on the table.
Dude, get your butt off
people
the
eat their
table.
Snacks off that.
Of incredible.
We're seeing a lot of like blue jeans
and
black pullovers.
Shocking change. You understand the nature of an object so much more when you understand how it came to be. The book tells dozens and dozens of stories.
Doesn't look like there's any text.
Momentum, you see learning. Of course, as designers,
maybe it's because they want it to be international.
It's not,
and also I think they want the designs to speak for themselves. I think they've been consistent in saying that the story that they tell is in their designs. They don't really have to explain it.
Right. So is this dedicated to Steve Jobs? That's nice. So that's what this is. That's why, Andy, I guess, no pre-Steve Jobs designs in here. This is the Johnny Ive, Steve Jobs collaboration is what this really is, isn't
it? But see, you know, there's a story about Steve Jobs and the Apple IIc, about him when he was just vice president, just basically bursting into someone's office with the person had the ability to go a project. And he simply laid down the story says he laid down like an Apple IIe motherboard, took a half-height drive, plopped it down on the top of the motherboard, took a keyboard, plopped it down on the other end of the motherboard, and just simply said, that is a great product. We should make it.
Yeah.
And maybe he had a conversation with somebody else who did the same thing, but it's not as though he wasn't involved in that.
I think Steve was always involved.
The Macintosh was him.
Yeah. Woz tells the story with the Apple II that, you know, Steve wanted this mold injected case. And, you know, Woz thought that's crazy. That's expensive. Nobody's going to. Why are you doing? No. I think Steve had that design sense very early on. There's no.
I think this is mostly Johnny's relationship with Steve, though.
This is you nailed it. This is the Steve and Johnny partnership is this.
Part. Yeah.
Now, fill me in. Is this a traditional thing that you make and you put in design schools, Andy? I mean, is that kind of what? Because I don't know what the market is for this.
Certainly, I don't think they're thinking that Apple fans are going to be getting it. No. I don't think it's a coincidence that's out in time for Christmas because it's an attainable price. But I really think that the way that they put that together, it really is that they. If you go to like graduate design labs. Schools again. You see the in-house library, and they are really these big, heavy, nicely put together books, and they are the armada. They're the flagship of a design firm, saying here is what we do, here is the story that we're trying to tell, here is what our taste is, and it always goes down to here is how we believe that humanity interacts with the physical objects. So it's not just a matter of promoting themselves. It really is we want when students go into design schools. When they pull something down off the shelf, our story is going to be alongside everybody else's story. So you certainly don't want to cheap out on it. You certainly want the best photographer you can because you can't have a book that includes stapled into it. Here is stapled into this. Here's an iPad. Stapled into it. Here is an iMac G4. Stapled into it. Here's a 20th century Mac, a 20th anniversary Mac. It really is, I think, a nod to history. I like to see Apple do more of this sort of thing. I really do want to see them recording their histories so that other engineers in the future will be able to learn techniques that were created and perfected at Apple.
Yeah.
I think this is also like, as Johnny says, it's not about looking back, it's about looking forward. And when you hear about people who've left Apple prototyping and they say like, finally, like right now, the MacBook Pro that shipped has stuff that they've been working on 8 years, that we're sort of seeing the end of the stuff that Steve was involved with rolling out. And this is the cap, again, the cap of that relationship. And from now on, it's moving forward.
Will it be on iBooks, in the iBook store?
I hope. This is a very, like, people were saying it's super expensive, and it is, but, like, Mark Newsom's book is $1,000. I think I paid $250 for my original Dark Knight Returns graffiti design book. Right. It's not uncommon in the world where this book exists.
It's for the serious fan. I remember going to a very famous, very wealthy Hollywood director's house, and they had an art book giant. They had its own stand and its own pair of white gloves, and so that it was clear, don't touch this, use your like, and that's so that for a certain class of people, that's a thing, it's an object art
My mother was a professor of art and art and architecture history, and I remember going to museums with her as a child, and she would buy these magnificent art books, and they just filled our living room as a child. So this, I mean, this very easily fits into that.
Yeah, that I love. Yeah, those were
giant Michelangelo books, bigger than I was.
Yeah, no, and I grew up with that too, and I love that. That resonates. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll be able to not only buy them, but also take a actually look at them at a certain handful of select ultra. Landmark Apple stores like the New York Apple store, and I'm looking forward to when I make my check out that book. I'm going to bring my magnifier because I bet the printing on that book is going to be magnificent. Where if no matter how much you magnify the photo, you will not be able to see the screen process. Yeah. It will just look like each page is going to be like an art print.
I will go to America.
I imagine that we're going to see. People buying them so they can razor them apart and sell each page as an art print on eBay for like $50, and they'll make their money back times eight.
We're starting to lose Andy. So I'll tell you what, let's take a break and maybe call Andy back while I do an ad. How about that?
And when we just say, Leo, only available in select countries. So check apple.com. It's not available everywhere.
Oh, okay.
And
we'll get some final stories in as we fix Andy's connection and get our picks of the week as we begin to wrap up our show today, brought to you by a fine work of art in its own right. You know, Corning is to glass what Apple is to phones. Corning is the glass company. Your Gorilla Glass, Corning. When I was a kid, I had Corningware as a kid, you know, the glassware. I think they sold that division off now, and they really are focused on technology products, including fiber optic cables. Corning makes pretty much all of, I think, the fiber optic cables, certainly the best-known fiber optic cables. And they have a consumer product, which I think you'd be very interested in. They have improved the glass. Original fiber optic cables are fragile, delicate. If you think of strands of glass in a shielded cable, you can imagine, right? And I remember when we first got fiber optic cables at the brick house, we, you know, Russell said, don't step on that. don't mess with that. We actually had to suspend them from the ceiling so they wouldn't get messed with. These new fiber optic cables from Corning are kind of amazing. You could tie them in a knot. You could tie them in a bow. You can crimp them. They take a bending and they just keep on sending. So whether you're in, and oh, here's the real advantage from your point of view. They're thinner, really thin, lighter. Very strong, very durable, very flexible, and because it's fiber optics, you can have cable runs of up to 60 meters. That's 200 feet for Thunderbolt. 60 meters. When you get this, the new Mac, 60 meters, 50 meters, or 165 feet for USB 3. That means you can take noisy devices and put them outside the room. You can eliminate clutter. You can eliminate the noise, the heat from hard drives and the like. You know, it's nice to have giant drive arrays. I have a giant Drobo with 5 spinning drives in it. But that thing, I don't want to keep that next to my computer. The whole desk would vibrate. So I use a USB 3.0 cable from Corning. Now, the nice thing is you don't have to have an optical interface for it. That's built into the cable. So these plug into the regular Thunderbolt and USB 3 ports, just like any other cable. But they have the optical interface built right in a very compact way into that connector. And then it's sending via light. People are using this everywhere. Universal Audio, I don't know if you're familiar with them. They do Thunderbolt audio interfaces and other audio equipment. They use the optical cables by Corning to achieve acoustic isolation in their studio as they test new equipment. So if you've got a Thunderbolt audio interface, you want to have a sound studio, but you don't want the drives in the studio. It's the last thing you want. So Universal Audio uses Thunderbolt optical cables by Corning to kind of move them outside. I love them. In fact, we can't keep them in here. They keep disappearing. And I confess, I brought a few home. I have the Thunderbolts and as I mentioned, the USB 3.0 for my Drobo. Optical cables by Corning. All available at all major electronics and professional AV retailers. Of course, Apple stores. I love this connector. That is just kind of really cool technology. I think that was key to making this consumer product was that adapter. It's not even an adapter. It's just a connector that turns the signals into light. B&H has them. Amazon has them. And you can find out more by visiting the website opticalcablesbycorning.com. Bend them, twist them, knot them. They work. They take a bending and they keep on sending. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. When we find a product like this, I love to share it with you. And I'm, you know, I'm glad they bought advertising, but I probably would be talking about it. Oh, don't tell them that. I'll probably be talking about it anyway, but don't tell them that. We need the money. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. Those Drobos aren't cheap. Andy and Akko, do we call you back?
Yes.
Good. It sounds great. It's working great. You know, sometimes after an hour or two, I think hotels cut you off.
Skype rot or Wi-Fi rot.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. I think that they said, let's see if this person is asleep or has left the room.
Yeah,
and forgot that Lawrence of Arabia is four hours when he's streaming it.
By the way, J.S. Tapples in our chat room makes an excellent point, which I should put in the ad copy for the Corning cables. They are impervious to RF interference because it's light. So if you have AC, we have this problem all the time with our mic cables, right? We have to route them around all the power transformer bricks and stuff, because otherwise you get 60 hertz ground loops in there and sound. Not with optical cables. No, the Corning cables, you know, they're impervious because it's light. Light's not interfered with. Did I miss any stories before we go on to our picks of the week? We only got partway through the rundown. I just want to make sure. Is there anything you guys wanted to talk about? For instance, Apple's new MacBook Pro generated 7 times the revenue than the MacBook at launch. I didn't report that because I feel like pre-orders are very specific. You know, those are orders sight unseen. Those are the hardest core users, the pent-up demand for people who just, you know, like me, had a 6-year-old laptop and just had to have the new one. I don't think they reflect the ongoing success of the MacBook Pro. I think that we're going to have to watch and see.
Yeah, the MacBook Nothing was a brand new product and was also a really freaky product. Right. So it was never intended to be something that everybody would want. Whereas the MacBook Pro is the thing that everybody's used to buying every 2 and 3 years, and there's pent-up demand. You're right.
Yep.
Also, the market is probably bigger now. Apple's done a lot to grow their market compared to previous years.
We didn't mention, I'll save that for a pick of the week. I was going to mention Touche.
So great.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Daniel Jalkut can code. Who knew?
Oh, that man is amazing. So I'll make it my pick. I haven't used it yet, but if you want to test drive the Touch Bar, Jalkut, our favorite red sweater software guy, mm-hmm. has created an iPad app that will let you test drive it on your Mac. Actually,
it's
on the Mac.
It's a Mac app.
Sorry. Apologies. Mm-hmm. Touche, you download and install it, and it's a Mac app that you open and close. Lets you take screenshots of the Touch Bar and whatever it shows. So the idea is not that you can touch it, because you obviously can't, but you can see what it would look like.
You can see what you're missing, yeah.
Yeah. And this is the same, this is actually the interface, or is it his guess at that? Like, I noticed these.
Well, no, you could pull it out of Xcode. I mean, I forget who did it, but some people were pulling it out of Xcode previously. And Steve Stratton Smith made a GitHub repository that you can compile. But Daniel made a version that's just super great for everybody to play with. It's not a geeky thing. It's an everybody thing.
You know what?
I was using it on with a Duet Display on my iPad, and it was actually pretty cool to actually have the touch.
Oh, so you could. That's why I was confused. So you can put it on your iPad with Duet.
Well, no. Well, guys, Duet Display means this is just being used as an external monitor for my Mac. And, of course, the touch display works as a mouse. But just that was pretty darn cool. It reminded me of like the software that would come out during Mac Hack, that the really, really great, intense Mac Developers Conference in Michigan that stopped happening about 10 years ago. Where it just be these really, really weird hacks, like this will just this system extension will turn the entire Mac interface into ASCII text, and everything would work. And so, we decided to give you Touch ID on the desktop for people who don't have the Touch Bar on non Touch Bar Macs. It works really great. I think it'll satisfy a lot of people's curiosity about what they're missing out on by not having a Touch Bar. So I think that maybe it'll even sell a few MacBooks. I hope that Apple leaves it alone because a lot of people, it's such a they're worried about what that interface will look like and if there's actually going to be anything useful to them, and this gives them a chance to actually play with it.
I would show you, but you do have to have the very latest version
Yes.
Of Sierra, which I didn't even know I didn't. So it says Touch Bar not supported. You have to be running 10.12.1, which I am.
Is that build?
But it has to be build 16B2657. So how do I update it? Do I have to? I can't do it.
I think you have to get the developer beta, is my guess. I'm also guessing that Apple's going to update Grab or something similar to make it copy the Touch Bar. I don't know when that'll happen. Maybe like a soon-to-be-released version of macOS, but I'm guessing it'll be an easy function.
So this is really also
kind of like when you screen grab a multi-monitor setup, it just works. It'll grab everything.
So this is really.
I think that works already. Some people were saying that the three-number combo would grab that as part of grabbing the overall display, but I have to double-check that.
Cool. All right. Well, good. Thank you, Daniel, for writing that. And I'm sure the ink-stained wretches who have to who have to write about the Touch Bar will be very grateful.
We are.
Yes, because they can at least do screen grabs. Renee, what's your pick this week?
So my pick, I haven't had a chance to try these yet because they were just announced, but they looked fantastic and I'm ordering them. So they're called Toms. And they're a company that Toms does a lot of really good work, and they're doing exclusive made for iPhone as part of Apple's program. They're making Toms bands for Apple Watch. And what's so cool about this is there's a couple styles and they look really, really cool. But also when you buy one, you donate a year of light so there's, you know, it's the Give Time program. Sorry, I was trying to remember the name of it. You brought it up on the screen, but it's the Give Time program. So not only do you get a super hot, still relatively brand new, so very few people will have them, but you'll be doing it for a noble cause, which I think is great. And the patterns are great. They have sort of NATO-y looking bands, and they have bands that look almost quilted, and they have sturdy leather on the inside. And it's a really novel look, at least to me. And again, good cause. A year of light for people. So
and they're not.
On the holiday season, it's...
You know, you might think, oh, well, that must mean a $100 band. They're not expensive. No. They're $50, so...
50 to 75, I think, for
depending on what you get.
Yeah, yeah. Really, and they're beautiful looking.
I'm going to go buy one right now. Thank you for the recommendation. That's really cool. Andy Iannacco, your pick of the week.
I've been using my pick of the week all during the show. This
Whoa! The prize!
This is the Blue Microphones Raspberry mic. I'm going to demonstrate how nicely directional this microphone is by actually letting you see it in front of the camera and turning it away from me. And as you can see, it doesn't really. It kind of rejects whatever else is in the room. But
I might have to get this for my office so I can record ads in this.
Yeah, I think it's a great microphone because anybody who does a lot of podcasts and does a lot of traveling knows, it's hard to find like a portable microphone that maximizes everything, meaning that it sounds really good, but it's way too big to really carry wherever to carry on a trip, or it's compact, but it doesn't have any creature comforts that makes it really convenient to use. This one is the first one I've tried that really maximizes everything. Not only does it sound really, really good, I haven't actually done an audio levels check, so hopefully the levels are okay. But talking about creature comforts, it has knobs on both sides for you can plug in your own headphones in the back here, but there's a headphone volume knob on the left here. And there is a microphone gain knob on the right here. So I don't have to, you know, dive into settings to get the optimal setting. I can just simply turn the knob until I get it right. Also, it has.
He just turned his mic off, ladies and gentlemen. It's got a mute button.
So if you just tap on it by the side, not only does it mute, but also turn that LED.
I guess.
From green to red, so you know that you're muted. Little things like it comes with this little tabletop stand, which I took off because one of the little tricks of getting microphones to work really well is to make sure that they're not like a foot away from your face. So it has a folding stand that also sort of protects it a little bit in travel by making it sort of a little cage around it. But it mounts with a regular little tripod mount. So if you take it off, you can actually use your Gorillapod or whatever little tripod you happen to travel with and stick it wherever you want. And do stuff like that. And finally, it also comes with it's designed so it works pretty much with anything. And it actually comes with a USB to Lightning cable. So you can use it with your iPhone. You can use it with your iPad. I can use it with my Android phone if I have a little USB-C adapter for it. And it's not cheap. It is $200. But if you it's painful only until after the first time you travel and you realize that I didn't have to bring like three or four different things that would sort of kind of almost be the right solution. This is finally like the one microphone that I can take with me for field recording and also for actually doing live shows. So this is going to be seeing one of the sad things where they sent me a review unit and I'm going to have to now find $200 in my budget next month to actually buy one because
it sounds really good. I have to say,
they make great mics.
Yeah. You could have fooled me. Yeah. And Blue's used professionally a lot, but some of the Blue USB consumer grade mics early on, the Snowball, for instance, were not great mics. This sounds very, very good. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. They make top end mics that that would appear on actual studio albums, and they go all the way down to inexpensive consumers. Where I think everyone here is a fan of like the Yeti mic, which is very, very flexible, and you can get it for $100. But it's like traveling with a loaf of bread. It's just you can't really.
I think
do
this
that.
Sounds better than the Yeti too. I have to say,
I think it sounds really good. Now I finally got the stand back on, so you can see that.
Yeah, they're very compact. Does it have a case or something so that I can?
Yeah, you get a not a soft case, but you do get like a nice drawstring bag that everything can go.
That's
into.
People I think don't realize that mic can easily be broken by mishandling. It's a fairly fragile instrument, so.
So you do have to be careful. As a matter of fact, when I buy mine, I'm probably going to like find a little cheap plastic case that's big enough for it and just give it a little bit of, knock protection. Because remember, there's sensitive elements inside here. And it's the difference between making something that sounds okay and something that sounds really good. The ones that sound okay, you can drop them off out of a moving car and it'll at least still record sound. But if you want it to sound really good. Very also, nice. I can pretend I'm reporting from my Les Nessman here.
It looks
Burke
was saying he doesn't like the industrial design on it, but actually, I really like the industrial design.
Me too.
I like that it looks nice, classic. But it doesn't try to be cute or cutesy and clever and retro about it.
Right.
It's a very, very practical shape for putting it. You'll find space for this in your bag. It doesn't have like weird lumps all around it where you find that, okay, I'm going to need to, carry it in a separate purse because there's no other bag that will hold this.
That's going in my shoe.
Looks like it belongs in a World's Fair. That's kind of designed.
It does, doesn't it? I'm putting it in my shoe. I'm going to put it in the bag and then put it in my shoe. The shoe will protect it.
What's in your shoe, sir?
It looks like it'll fit perfectly, right?
Yep.
Your audio sounds great, but it smells kind of cheesy.
Hey, I take good care of my shoes. I usually have wooden shoe trees in them.
Leathery goodness.
Yeah. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of this fine episode of MacBreak Weekly. We do thank you so much for being here. Andy Iannacco's at the Chicago Sun-Times when he's not in Los Angeles. You're out here for the Mac Tech Conference?
I'm here for the Mac Tech Conference, yes. And while I'm promoting things, I've launched a brand new podcast on Relay.fm.
You told us you were going to do that. Yeah.
Called Simply Almanac. And you can go to Relay.fm/Almanac to check it out and subscribe. First episode dropped last week. Second episode will be heading out tomorrow or Thursday. And of course, there are blog posts that explain what the whole concept is. But really happy with it. The logo is, oh my God, I can't believe that I have this is the logo of a podcast that I would subscribe to.
I like that logo. It's like the United Nations kind of laurel branches, but inside all the little Andy Iannacco things.
Gold foil embossed. I actually sent them a scan of an almanac I own from 1853 from my collection for like the pebbled texture of the book. And I think that's what we're looking for. Great. Okay. Got it. And so that's
the microphone. Please subscribe because win.
I've spent my entire life telling publishers that no, we can't use the hat as a logo for anything because that means that I no longer will have the option of not wearing the hat to things. But that appeared like, oh my God, that is so good. I can't say no. Anyway, but the content is also very good, I'm saying, but I have a lot to live up to that logo.
Iannacco, he's back, baby. Replay.fm. Look for the almanac. Number one
Relay.
Is out.
Relay.fm.
Relay.fm. What did I say? Replay?
Replay.
Gosh darn it. There was a product called Replay FM. That's why I get confused.
Registering replay.pizza right now.
Relay.fm. Thank you, Andrew. We also thank Mr. Rene Ritchie from imore.com. He's always a slice. Looks like he's getting a little busier on the shelf behind you. You got a Lego project going there?
No, not. But I'm thinking of redesigning it, Leo. So if you have any ideas, suggestions, whatever, let me know. Because I'd like to go into 2017 with a new look.
I think all space gray all the time is what I'm thinking.
I'll make a fort out of Apple products.
A fort would be awesome. Thank you, Renee. Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. Please tune in, watch us, join us live in the chat room at irc.twit.tv or visit the studio. We have tickets available. We're not quite sold out today. Tickets at twit.tv. Tickets at twit.tv. But if you can't be here in studio and in person or on the stream or in the chat room, you don't have to worry because we are very happy with you subscribing. In fact, frankly, that's how we make our living. So do subscribe at twit.tv/MBW. Or you can also find us on all the podcasting apps that you might enjoy. Please do subscribe, though, because we would love to see you next week and every week on Mac Break Weekly. Thanks for joining us. Now, I'm sorry to say, back to work because you know what? Break time is over.